Hi, I'm Pat Rulo, author, speaker, and radio host of Speak Up Talk Radio. I'm local and vocal when it comes to healthcare safety. If you need a life-changing topic and speaker for your next event, call me, 440-725-5462, or visit speakupandstayalive.com. Patient safety is your right, so don't go wrong. Let me share what I know with your group, 440-725-5462, or visit speakupandstayalive.com.
Hot. Bring the heat. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Welcome to Speak Up Talk Radio, where nothing is off limits when it comes to your health, wellness, healthcare safety, or just plain sanity. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, author of the book on the recommended reading list of the U.S. Army's Medical Department, titled Speak Up and Stay Alive, The Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide, available at the website speakupandstayalive.com. As a healthcare safety speaker, trainer, and researcher, it is my goal to keep you safe from what the masses embrace as normal. Thank you for joining me today as together we become the voice for informed choice. It's time to get started. Well, recently I updated my book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, The Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide, and I've decided to create some small ebooks available on Kindle based on some very specific chapters. And recently I've been hearing a lot more about hospital acquired infections. So I redid the chapter on hospital acquired infections, and you could now find a small ebook, something you can download to any of your devices. And if you're in a hospital or for friends in a hospital, you can refer to that immediately. So you can get that on Amazon. Just type in my name in the search box, Patricia Rulo, R-U-L-L-O, Patricia Rulo. And the book is called Healthcare Acquired Infections, The Troublemakers and How to Avoid Them. As I was working on this, it takes me back to 2008 when my mom had a terrible accident at work. And it all started when a doctor gently grasped my arm in the hospital hallway. I did not know him, and his visit was unannounced. And in a hushed voice, he asked me to join him in a small room just outside the cardiac intensive care unit where my mom was fighting for her life. As the door closed behind us, another door opened, leading me into a world of fear, anger, disbelief, and ultimately, strength. Now, this doctor had learned through the hospital network system that my mom had suffered a serious myocardial infarction after shoulder surgery. And 2 days after that heart attack, this doctor took it upon himself to find me to share information that he asked me to keep confidential. As he handed me a yellow envelope, he said these words, "This stinks, and you need to do something about it." Well, 10 days earlier, my mom, who was 78 years old at the time, she fell while working at a bridal shop. While retrieving a veil for a customer, she tripped over a 2-inch high threshold between the stockroom and the showroom, and she fell forward, absorbing the full impact with her shoulder. Now, the city had cited the faulty threshold as a building violation long before the shop opened for business, and it was just one of many violations the shop owner felt free to ignore. Strangely, the city also chose to overlook the violation and permitted the shop to open to the public with unchecked and unresolved safety hazards. Now, because the accident happened at work, the incident was reported to the Bureau of Workers' Compensation. Well, to add insult to injury, the shop owner had not paid her workers' comp premiums in over a year. And oh, it was not the first time she had done this. So with no coverage in place, she was liable for all medical bills. I heard her talking on the telephone to my mom when my mom had it on speakerphone, and she said, "Oh, please don't let anyone know that you were working at the time. Tell them that you came in just to pick up your paycheck." I kid you not. Well, a little string pulling, some political mumbo jumbo, and a check for only $800, it put this shop owner in the clear. It makes me wonder why any employer would bother paying workers' comp premiums. But I guess that's a story for another time. Well, the fall crushed my mom's right shoulder, and repairing it called for surgery. The surgeon recommended a reverse total shoulder replacement, a unique procedure that switches the ball in the socket. It is a highly technical surgery in which a metal ball is attached to the shoulder bone and a plastic socket is attached to the upper arm bone. So my mom was scheduled for surgery on the following Monday, and after we arrived at the hospital, the staff prepared her for surgery. We waited for 4 hours until they sent us home because the surgeon didn't feel well. Well, interestingly enough, as we headed out of the hospital, I saw the surgeon getting off the elevator, drinking a cup of coffee and laughing with another doctor. They strolled out, talking and joking around. I'm not a doctor, but he didn't look sick to me. After 3 days of stressful attempts to reach him and cryptic conversations with his not-so-helpful secretary, they rescheduled the surgery for Thursday. My mom was feeling ill the day before surgery. We chalked it up to nerves, yet looking back, she may have been showing signs of a heart attack. On the morning of the procedure, during the pre-surgery assessment, my mom's blood pressure was 80 over 55. She complained of not feeling well. The assistant anesthesiologist, who, incidentally, had his license suspended a few weeks later for stealing anesthesia drug waste to support his own drug habit, he looked at the head anesthesiologist with concern in his eyes and he asked her, "What about the blood pressure reading?" She ignored him. The surgeon walked in and asked to view the pre-op test results from the x-rays and the echocardiogram my mom had taken a few days earlier. They were nowhere to be found. His secretary had failed to forward them, despite several phone calls from me and the lab to request that she do so. The surgeon laughed and blamed it on the lab, saying, "Huh, that's the Greenfield lab for you." Well, despite my mom's warning signs, the shoulder surgery took place. And I sat in the waiting room from 5:30 a.m. until 10:15 a.m. when the surgeon came out and said that my mom was in recovery and I could see her in 45 minutes. 11 o'clock came and went. I watched the surgeon and his assistant leave the hospital. At noon, I questioned the woman at the reception desk and she told me that your mom is in pain management. Well, finally at 1:15, I was allowed to enter the recovery room. My mom's skin was pale gray. She complained repeatedly, "I don't feel good, I don't feel good." When asked where she felt pain, she pointed to her chest. And with that, one of the nurses gave her an injection of Versed, a sedative, that stopped my mom's words before she could complete the sentence. And the last thing I heard her say was, and they sent me out of the room. At 3:20, the receptionist called me back into the recovery room, and seconds later, the nurses ushered me out. At 4:30, a nurse came out to the waiting room with an anxious look on her face. "Your mother is having a heart attack, and we have to get her to the operating room as soon as possible," she said. Well, the staff scrambled once again to find the pre-op EKG results to use as comparison. However, thanks to the indifferent surgeon and his secretary, the prior test results were not there. If not for the mystery doctor who risked his job and his reputation to share his findings with me, I would not have known what actually happened the morning of my mom's surgery. Based on the nonchalant attitude of the surgeon and the anesthesiologist, I was suspicious of their desire to complete the surgery, yet nothing prepared me for what was inside the yellow envelope. As we sat at the small conference table, the mystery doctor showed me a copy of the EKG taken 2 days earlier at 10:53 a.m. the morning of the shoulder surgery. It showed not only the squiggly lines on the rhythm strip, which, as a layperson, I did not understand, but written at the top of the page were the words, "Acute myocardial infarction in progress." He then showed me the results from the follow-up EKGs taken around 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, and again at 4:20. All of them showed clear signs of heart trouble. At 10:53 a.m., a heart attack was in progress, which means she had likely been having heart trouble before that, perhaps even during surgery. At 11 o'clock a.m., the surgeon sauntered out of the building, either unaware of the heart attack or not caring about it because his part of the job was over. In addition, an entire post-surgery unit staff and anesthesiologist had failed to recognize and follow up on what should have been obvious to any medical professional. Now, in the days and weeks that followed, it became apparent that the hospital was well aware of the potential for a wrongful death lawsuit if my mom were to die. They bent over backward to offer special treatments and proposed a surgery not ordinarily performed on a person of her age. This salvage surgery, as they called it, involved a seldom used procedure using a right ventricular assist device, performed, I must say, by an outstanding surgeon. They gave Mom the only closed-door private room in the intensive care unit. Everyone was doing everything possible to keep her alive. And I was in an interesting position in that I knew all the details of the undiagnosed heart attack, and yet no one knew that I knew. This allowed me to observe behavior, watch body language, and have pointed conversations with subsequent surgeons, doctors, and hospital staff. I took this time to gather information to complete the facts surrounding this grievous mistake. And so began 4 months of my mom's repeated brushes with death, all because of human error, ignorance, and carelessness on the part of the hospital and its staff. I witnessed many adverse events during my mom's experience. She endured every hospital-acquired infection available. Several events resulted in formal hospital-documented incident reports. Certain staff members were prohibited from entering my mom's room. For example, I watched a surgeon attempt to insert drainage tubes to remove fluid that was accumulating in mom's chest. In the process, he punctured one of her lungs, causing blood and fluid to spray around the room. Another doctor ushered me out, but I remained in the hallway watching as at least a dozen nurses ran in and out of the room with blood transfusions and other life-saving devices. Oh, and to make matters worse, during these frantic moments, the power went out, sirens blared, and a lockdown mandated through the public address system. The convergence of these events set the tone for the incomprehensible trials we faced on an almost daily basis. A week later, a friendly but overly talkative nurse accidentally administered epinephrine, which is also known as adrenaline, instead of the intended drug, the antibiotic, vancomycin. The mistake was noticed not by the nurse, but by my daughter, just before Mom went into cardiac arrest. Meanwhile, every few days, the shoulder surgery anesthesiologist, who was mainly responsible for the missed heart attack, and her drug-stealing assistant, would surreptitiously peer into my mom's room while exchanging furtive and knowing glances with each other. They were not a part of Mom's care team and had no reason to be hanging around her room. And they had no idea I knew about the life-threatening error or that I kept a watchful eye on their suspicious rounds. The shoulder surgeon, what a gent. He made it a point to be unavailable. 18 hours after my mom's shoulder surgery, she was back in the operating room for her second heart surgery. I ran into this shoulder surgeon in the hospital hallway. Nervously, he offered, "Oh, I just saw your mom a few minutes ago. She looks good." I answered, "Really? Where did you see her? Because she's been in surgery for the last 5 hours." I was shocked that he so freely lied to me. Throughout the rest of my mom's stay, his absence and elusiveness continued. Every Friday, Mom's doctors, surgeons, and nurses held a family meeting to keep me informed of her progress, and each week I requested his attendance. Each week, he phoned in with an excuse. One evening, I saw him enter the ICU. I crossed his path and asked him directly what went on during the morning of Mom's shoulder surgery. He danced back and forth, slipped his shoe on and off, and he said, "Had I known what I do today, I would have done things differently. The anesthesiologist didn't tell me your mom was having a heart attack." His body language and ambiguous answers left me knowing there was more to the story. and I never saw him again. He did not return, not even to remove her stitches. 4 months later, a nurse at the rehabilitation center noticed nylon threads hanging from my mom's shoulder. She removed them herself while shaking her head in disbelief. But I did find out a few years later, he had been promoted. Well, for weeks, my mom needed a ventilator to help her breathe. She was intubated with an endotracheal tube inserted through her mouth. The tube was tied with thin straps around her face and taped into place on her cheeks. Bound and gagged, she looked like a prisoner. The pressure from the straps caused serious skin breakdown to her lips. She was unable to speak or move and was groggy from drugs. In an effort to communicate, I would recite each letter of the alphabet until she stopped me with a slight eyebrow movement that I often missed. Sometimes this spelling exchange took hours and made it difficult for me to understand her concerns. One morning, through this obscure method of dialogue, my mom indicated pain at her urine catheter site. All day, I begged the nurse to change it. She always had an excuse. At the end of the day, as I headed toward the exit door, I saw the nurse waiting in the hallway with the new catheter package. I turned around to see her enter my mom's room, so I headed back. I watched, and it became clear why she had not changed the catheter while I was there. She obviously did not know how to do it. She unfolded the directions that accompanied the tubing kit and placed them on the bed. Then she turned the tube in many directions, trying to match the pictures on the paper. When I noticed that she was not wearing gloves, I popped in and asked her to send a nurse who was qualified to change a urine catheter. It gets worse. Early the next morning, I entered my mom's room to find her feet bound with bloody gauze. I unraveled the gauze, and I saw all 10 of her toenails mangled and torn as if someone had used a machete to cut them. I flew out of the room to the nurse's station to demand an explanation. For some reason, a local podiatrist had made his rounds in the middle of the night to perform his ghoulish pedicures. "Oh, yeah," one of the nurses responded. "We get complaints about him all the time." I promised them that if my mom got an infection, I would take serious measures to address this heartless action. 2 weeks later, my mind was shattered once again as I watched a senior physician teach a room full of interns how to clean a bed sore. My mom had a stage 4 bed sore, and as the students gathered at her bedside, the doctor wandered across the room to the windowsill where I kept my Clorox wipes, because each morning I would wipe every surface in the room in an attempt to keep the germs at bay. Somehow this doctor had spotted the wipes, and before anyone could react, he pulled several out of the container and proceeded to wipe this bedsore with Clorox bleach. The hospital filed another incident report, and the doctor was banned from my mom's room. Well, these are only a few of the bizarre and unimaginable events that took place right in front of me, and I can only wonder how many other mistakes occurred when I was not there. However, despite the constant calamities, many extremely competent doctors, nurses, and hospital staff eventually saved the day. Throughout this experience, I had the opportunity to feel fear and enter the unknown and emerge as a wiser medical consumer with a message to share. Now, when life presents difficult assignments, I always ask myself, what am I supposed to do with this information? Well, my book and this radio show is my answer. If my mom's experience helps one other person, then there is a positive reason for her journey. So as I'm sure you know, I travel around speaking to groups and organizations and companies to create awareness and help build educated and empowered hospital safety support groups, patients, and hospitals. I say that the best way to survive a hospital stay is to stay out of the hospital. However, if you find yourself faced with a hospital visit, I encourage you to take my book with you. You can use it as a guide to remind you of ways to protect yourself, Give copies to your friends and family and coworkers, because the information in my book applies to everyone. You have to learn how to be your own advocate and try to have an advocate with you at all times during a hospital stay. Sadly, as I mentioned, my mom suffered with every single infection I share in my new book, Healthcare Acquired Infections, and I've kept it short and concise. And my words certainly are not an end-all, but rather a starting point for you to at least know the names and symptoms of the troublemakers. You can find my complete book at the website speakupandstayalive.com. Visit the shop page and you can get the actual physical book. But if you're interested just in the hospital acquired infections book, I think it's $4.49, something like that, on Kindle, on Amazon. And you can download that directly to your Kindle or to your mobile device. And you can find that at amazon.com. Just search my name, Patricia Rullo, R-U-L-L-O. And if you have any questions, feel free to give me a call, 440-725-5462. So I hope you feel empowered to speak up during every healthcare or hospital encounter, because you have to speak up and stay alive.
Listen to Pat Rullo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
Hi, I'm Jana Panaritis, host of the AgeWise podcast and a caregiver for my aging mom. Do you mind telling us how old you are, Mom?
I do mind. I would say forget it.
Yep, that's my mom. Many of the guests on my show are caregivers who sometimes get into arguments with their loved ones. That's why it's important to talk with each other about what you're feeling. Mom and I do this a lot, but we didn't used to, because after my father died, she was so devastated by her loss, she could barely speak.
The biggest shock of my life was when he died.
Listeners have told me they appreciate hearing from caregivers on the show because it helps them to know they're not alone. Join me each week at speakuptalkradio.com for caregiving stories that will help you feel less alone. To learn more about the show, visit agewise.com. That's agewyz.com. Are you enjoying your life right now, Mom?
Very much. I want to live forever.
Hi there, I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, the voice of Mrs. Green on the airwaves. Mrs. Green's World is a global movement of ideas and actions made up of people who care about their own health and the health of this planet. If you're interested in things like clean water, clean air, clean oceans, or would like to know more about just what it means to live a sustainable life, you will love to hear what our guests from all over the world have to say. Please visit our website at mrsgreensworld.com to learn more and to become a part of our world.
Cold weather is back here in Northeast Ohio. Is your furnace ready for a workout? Mine is, because it's been checked by the team at BNK Heating and Cooling. Last winter, our system decided to die, and with one quick phone call, BNK was at the back door ready to heat things up. So before that happens to you, schedule an appointment with their licensed, bonded, and fully insured professional experts. It's just $69.95 and well worth it. Stay cozy this winter. Call Bill at 216-210-2529. That is 216-210-2529. Or visit them at bnkheating.com and tell him I sent you. Well, there you have it. Lots to think about and plenty to share with others. And to do so, simply head over to the website, speakupandstayalive.com, where you can listen to today's show again and hear previous episodes, all under the Radio Archives button. And while you're there, visit the shop page to get a copy of the life-saving book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, Your Hospital Survival Guide. And for more of my books, visit Amazon.com. Type my name in the search bar, Patricia Rullo, R-U-L-L-O, and you will find some other goodies. Now, if you're in the Cleveland, Ohio area, listen to the show every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock on WHKW, AM 1220, as well as on WHKZ, AM 1440. And tune in again every Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. Same show, but on WHK, AM 1420. We're also on iTunes, iHeartRadio, SpeakUpTalkRadio.com, and about 50 additional online venues. So no excuse to miss a single episode. And if you just need more of me, invite me to speak to your group, club, church, business, or hospital. My presentations are fun, fast-paced, informative, and life-saving. And I can guarantee this, no one falls asleep on my watch. Visit speakupandstayalive.com for more information. Email me at pat@speakupandstayalive.com or call me and leave a message on the radio studio line, 440-725-5462. That is 440-725-5462. Well, that is it for today. Until next time, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week. I am Pat Rulo, and I am the voice for informed choice.